Yun Ah is the founder of Nuts and Bolts Technologies. He holds 37 patents on applied cryptographic inventions and works as a head trader, technologist, and inventor focused on digital solutions inspired by nature. So Yun, take me back to your college days. What were your dreams and aspirations then? And if you were to speak to yourself today, would you be surprised of what path you took?
Yes and no. So during college, I decided that I wanted to major in physics, and that's at Columbia College in New York. And I got my physics bachelor, but somewhere along the line, I realized that physics grad school wasn't for me. And I ended up actually doing an extra year on a combined program to get an engineering degree in engineering mechanics. So I did physics and engineering. Then I went straight to Wall Street to program trading systems. I didn't really take too much computer science classes in college, as you can see from the workload, but I've always programmed since I was in high school, since 14. We had this fantastic computer science teacher when I went to Dalton, and his name was Chuck Rice. He taught us from college textbooks. And so that's all the computer programming I've ever learned is in high school. It took me through college and then beyond to Wall Street. I worked for about 10 years on Wall Street building institutional trading systems for.
Awesome.
That was like my first career. Then my second career is at Credit Suisse. Somehow I got introduced to the head of the domestic program trading desk. They just lost their head trader, but they would like to get a new trader that they could train. But I don't know, in the 90s, what you had was you had this influx of big IT starting, right? And everything's chaotic. There's like business IT is something that was like growing and growing. And there was a growing sense among the business side of the people, like the people who are trading, people who are doing sales, that they weren't getting a clear picture of what the hell's going on when the IT guy tells them, like, it'll be another 2 months, it'll be over budget, or it'll be late, or they can't be done, or whatever. And at some point, I think they got the notion that they're not being told the truth, right? I think half the time it's true that they weren't being told the truth. So my boss at the time, he wanted somebody who was tech savvy, knew what the hell was going on, and that he'll teach me how to trade, and I could liaise for him with the IT guys. And so that was the end of that. No more half truths. And the nice part was like IT guys would the manager would come and say, oh, that'd be like a major project. And then I would just turn around and write something in Perl and just get it done. So it didn't win me any friends. But when there were major problems, I was able to solve it. So what happens is in global domestic program trading desks, the busiest seasons back then was index changes. And that happened at least quarterly. And index changes are huge because at the end of the quarter, you have a lot of mutual funds that have huge rebalancing orders. And then our desk would get inundated with tens and tens of thousands of orders that have to be booked by that night. And this is T+3 day trading. And our systems were so slow that if you waited for systems to work, we'd be there like 24 hours booking trades. It's crazy. And so I was allowed at some point to be able to write Perl scripts that directly interface the booking system. And we booked all the trades that way. Otherwise, we'll get out of there. Yeah.
Pioneer of like algorithmic trading to some extent. Huh?
Well, I mean, in any control system in finance, that is an absolute no-no. You don't have a trader program book trades right into the back office systems. That's like crazy risk, right? But the thing was, these unique times, there was no other choice. Now, that was back in the late 90s, right? And even in the 2010s, when I was a head trader over in Illinois, we had the same problems. I had to create the Visual Basic code that fed the trades right straight into the clearing systems. We had an entire IT department. I was the head trader. I was the only one who could do it in time to get everything done, right? That's like, so you figure that in 15 years, something changes. But sometimes things just never change. It's the truth.
I also think an example of what you're saying that shows how you've built your own unique value system where you had the skill of a trader and you had the skill of a programmer, you've essentially crossed into territory that was seemingly mutually exclusive. Someone like you acted like a bridge and probably did very well for yourself. I mean, maybe to some extent you didn't make certain friends in certain areas, but at the same time, it sounds like you were an indisposable asset in that specific area.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope that when somebody in IT with the right viewpoint sees that happening, it should be their priority to ease that problem and fix it so that it never happens again. Right. But people are people. You can't change how they work, so it just persists. So there are certain things of this nature that we found after I left trading. I was kind of taking a couple of years off, and but I never went back, because I got very absorbed with the idea of, like, how do you provide privacy for people on your own devices without having to resort to third parties taking a sneak peek? And that's our entire universe right now. If you live on the digital internet, it's virtually impossible for you to control your own data and keep it private amongst your own devices. Doesn't work. Doesn't help.
You have to, like, compromise yourself to one party that you hope you trust to stop you from being compromised from everyone else. I think of a VPN or whatever it may be.
That's because the whole business system of the Web 2.0 is all about exploitation of user data. And everything is built upon that, and nothing's going to change that, because sales will always win. At some point around 2013 or 14, I asked my wife, hey, you know, you mind if I take like 3 or 4 years and work on this problem? Because I'd like to see what I could concoct or put together in terms of buying software and piecing it together. And she's like, okay, do that as long as you buy me a house. So I bought her a house. And while she's busy with the house, I was tinkering around. I found very quickly that you can't buy different little systems and piece them together. Just doesn't work. And so I started thinking about what are the real problems. And that's how Nuts started, is that what's at the root of our privacy problems systematically? And what can we do about it technically? It was very interesting, because I ended up in a place that I did not believe I would end up in. And that's not in an alien ship, okay? What I found is that computer science is one of those fields where everything is on the internet. All the master theses, all the doctoral theses that mean anything, all the major projects and papers that postdoctoral students and all the professors write, they're all available on the internet. And I looked for years and I couldn't find a thing that would help me in what I was trying to solve. Then somehow I caught a Nova science program on PBS about DNA. And I was like, oh man, this is actually pretty cool, right? Because if you view DNA as data,
right,
evolution has actually solved a lot of the same problems that we have with large data systems today. And it just did it organically. And I was like, well, I don't have to create DNA within computers, but maybe I could extract some lessons from DNA viewed as a data management system. And what can I learn from it? And if I apply what I think I learned from it, what will it become? And that was the impetus for Nuts. Now, one of the technologies that came out of that is a specific technology I called structured data folding with transmutations, SDFT. Now, data folding is a term I came up with because, do you know what DNA does? Is you've heard of protein folding.
Yeah. Yeah, right. DNA is a base four system which codes for proteins, and it's the blueprint for everything we have around us.
Proteins is an amazing little thing, because it's like it strands together these little things, but it's useless until you organize it by folding it in some way in three dimensions. So data that's not organized is not useful. That's what I learned. And then the other concept with DNA is incomplete data is not useful. Okay, so I don't know how much you know about databases, but the way most data is gathered and split up is that it's always normalized, it's tables, there's key indices, there's always split up into many tables. That's not very useful data. That's what DNA was telling me, that everything we learned in database theory, Mother Nature does not rely on that for your survival. I got a paper cut on my finger the other day, right? And it was bleeding. And I'm like looking at that. So think about that. You have a paper cut at the tip of your finger. If your body was organized like a modern database, you'll have parts of DNA all over your body. And then you get a paper cut and your body has to figure out, how do I coalesce all the DNA parts that I need at that fingertip to deliver the skin cells that it needs to heal, right? And by the time it figures that out, you'll be dead, right? You're going to bleed out. And so I'm like, you heal because the skin cells right next to the cut are complete pieces of DNA. It right. knows how to replicate itself, right? So that's what I mean by complete data is useful data. Incomplete data is absolutely useless.
Can't it also be interpreted as aggressively redundant to have like yes. each cell have its mitochondria and have its own
thing,
DNA?
Right. It's massive resiliency, right? And right. massive replication. In fact, our bodies are the only systems that I know of in the world that can manage 30 to 40 trillion cells in one unit without a problem. Right. No human-made system can control that much information in a unified manner. So you think about, did DNA solve some unbelievable problems? Yes, it knows how to protect itself. It knows how to solve problems. It knows how to fight viruses. It knows how to differentiate, which is actually pretty cool. Right. Because all babies start from the same stem cells and that's all they do. And then each stem cell differentiates. So I took those ideas, started trying to pick up little lessons out of it and try to apply it. And that's what happened with NUTS. But this structured data folding with transmutations solves a specific problem in applied cryptography. And that is, how do you encrypt the message in such a way that the message itself is self-describing? So you could almost say DNA is a self-describing message. It's a big chunk of data that describes basically how it could replicate itself and perpetuate itself as long as it has an energy source. So I try to do that with the same thing at the message level for computers. And it's because that this communication session that we're on right now, you and me, when it connected the two machines, it negotiated what's the cryptography that's going to protect this session, right?
Handshake. It's an agreement.
And for the entire session, it stays the same. What I wanted to do was have sessionless messages where each message that gets passed can say, I'm encrypted this way and vice versa on the way back too. And we did that because of two reasons. One, there is no unified way of expressing data for security for both data in transit and data at rest. They're two very different methods. And that makes security very vulnerable. And it requires two different tool sets the way they do it. So we wanted to unify that. And the other part is that we wanted to do it because it just like gets rid of these incompatibilities between systems. There's almost no two cybersecurity systems I've seen that can interact, even though they both say, we use AES 256. You need a consultant or a team to come in and make sure that they can talk to one another. There's so many varieties of AES 256 mm-hmm. that could work. And so we were solving those problems. Now, we did that to create these NUT structures, NUT capsule structures that are very protective of data. And then we actually started pushing in, these government-funded grants. And we got a couple of Air Force grants. And then we ended up in 2024 winning a NIST Small Business Innovation Research Grant. And I don't know, you know who NIST is, right? It's the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Very mm-hmm. prestigious. They cover all the science fields, including cryptography. They cover weights and measurements, chemicals, everything, right? And they are basically the laboratory of the United States. And they picked our project as one of a dozen that they pick per year. And we were like, oh, how did that come about? We were actually picked and overseen by the cryptography group who was actually picking, they were responsible for picking the PQC algos, the post-quantum cryptography algos. And so when we first met, it's a 6-month project. I'm like, SDFT, our structured data folding with transmutations protocol, why did you pick this project? We proposed to them that we were going to show them how we could do transition of cryptography on a per message basis. And the head of the two people who were overseeing us, he was the senior guy. He said, well, we picked you because we wanted to see what that looked like because we didn't think it was possible at that granular level. So I'm like, really? You guys are supposed to have seen everything. And over a period of 6 months, we showed them what we could do with all of their candidate algorithms for quantum resilience and all of their standards for standard PQC algos. They were very happy with what they saw. And at the last meeting where we actually showed them the results and all of that stuff, they were very happy. But they were the ones who said, we think that you might want to take a look at blockchains. And we're like, what do you mean? We're not really blockchain guys. And they were like, they may actually benefit from your technology. So take a look. So we started digging in and we're like, my God, this was like crazy. Because what we call an SDFT message is actually the same as a blockchain transaction, right? So our technology will be able to allow any blockchain transaction to describe what signature it's using or a combination of signatures, right? Because right now, everybody is hard-coded to basically elliptic curve cryptography. In our world, we rebranded SDFT to QFlex because everybody thought that SDFT just doesn't flow too well. So we call it QFlex. And we said, if you stick QFlex into blockchains, there's two benefits. The asset owner, the coin owner, now gets to dictate what type of signature they want to protect their asset with in that transaction. And that's a very powerful paradigm shift because right now they have no choice. But in our world, you could choose any cryptography or any combination of cryptography that you want at any time. Now, the flip side of that is what happens to the blockchain network itself. The blockchain network itself is now future-proof. They no longer have to worry about, do we need to change cryptography? Do we need to make major changes? Everybody can do it on their own time whenever they want. So it's a very different world that we're proposing, but it's very flexible. I think that's more in tune with what blockchains are all about. It gives power to the people. And if it's your coin, why shouldn't you have the choice of what lock you want to put on it? I think, let me just think for you in the next question, which is, why do you want to worry about like changing locks all the time? Isn't like one or two locks good enough? And there goes the underlying truth, is that in modern cryptography, there's only ever been one algorithm that's been provably secure mathematically. Called a one-time pad, and it's virtually useless in a network environment, so we don't use it. But the flip side of that statement is, then what have we been using? None of what we've been using in modern computers is provably secure. That means with elliptic curve cryptography, RSA, AES,
it's we've secure all been just from lucky. Convenience that no one's going to sacrifice 80 years of their life guessing every password.
So we all agree. It's been attacked for so long, for decades, that everybody feels secure. Now, with the advent of quantum advances, that's no longer going to be true. Now, the
for certain kinds of encryptions, like
absolutely.
The SHA-1.
For anything that's like elliptic curve or RSA or has a mathematical formula behind it, depends on the type of math, but it could be easily broken, theoretically. Right. And they're proving that it is possible, and they're getting more and more powerful. So that means that all of these post-quantum cryptography algorithms that are being standardized are unproven. They haven't been hardened for decades from attacks, right? So how do you trust them? And because of that, the US NIST standardized three PQC algorithms in the summer of 2024. So you go, three, that's not that bad, right? It's only three of them. But you know how many flavors they come in, or we call them variants? They come in 16 variants. Three algos turn into 16 different varieties you could choose from. They're proposing, just this past month, they're proposing another six variants. That's already 24. They're working on five more. You're talking now 29, just from the US alone. Korea has another five standards because they set up their own PQC agency. China has their own PQC agency. Europe is thinking about their own stuff. We're going to be awash in so many PQC variants, you don't even know what to do with. And you may actually have sovereign cryptography rules coming in, right? So if you're doing business out of South Korea, they could mandate every South Korean originating business has to use this type of cryptography. What are you going to do? We're building a Tower of Babel, and you're going to be awash in variants. So you go, there's two questions. Why so many variants? We go back to that original statement. We only have one cryptography that's ever been provably secure. So everything's a guess. As long as it looks good, they're going to standardize it. And then they'll say, you're free to choose whatever you want. We'll let you know if there's a problem and it's up to you to change it. And that's why we believe QFlex is so integral to blockchains, because since none of these are road tested for years and years, you're going to want to change on the fly if things go south for a particular algorithm. And you need to do that. There's a lot of factors here. But the main thing is that change is good. Change under the user's control is better. And that will help blockchains become future-proof.
Fascinating. Where can people learn more about this?
I think we're the only ones really talking about it at this level of crypto agility. You've heard that term. But crypto agility has so many varying scales. Most versions of crypto agility is session level. When you go, does your communication end do this cryptography? We'll settle on that and we'll talk. Next session could be different. Blockchain systems, when they're talking about what they're planning to do to be quantum resistant, their version of crypto agility is we'll restart the system and then everybody, you know, can start changing over to the new cryptography, which means that you have to go into your wallet and change all the stuff that trades on that blockchain.
Right.
And to us, that's not a solution. That's a kludge, right? You're perpetuating a bad architecture into the future, and then you're guaranteeing that you're going to have bad service going into the future. And your clients and users may not be able to respond fast enough to a really bad risk, right? If I have a lot of assets on a particular blockchain and I hear that a version of post-quantum cryptography is weak and has been broken, I want to be able to go into my wallet and instruct it to identify all the coins that's been protected by that method and change over right now.
Yeah.
But if the blockchain controls that decision, I am helpless. So it makes the blockchain more appealing or less appealing. And therefore, some of these blockchains that have coins associated with their own blockchains, it could affect that valuation as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. How could people get in touch with you?
They have my email, yoon@boltstechnologies.xyz. We have boltstechnologies.xyz on the website. We've done plenty of articles and podcasts and trying to get the word out. It's not an intractable problem. We have a very good solution. We're not saying it's the only solution, but we think we have one of the most far-reaching solutions in that it's a complete solution, right? We have that solution for what do you do when the cryptography you've chosen for the blockchain fails? That's the big question. It's like, let's not make mistakes of the past and let's not repeat them. Let's prepare for them by making change a daily thing. So why do we always have fire drills? Or why do you exercise, right? You do it so that it becomes routine. As soon as something is no longer routine, that's when it's going to fail when you need it. You know that, right?
Yeah.
That's why we exercise things. We believe that that's the same thing with cryptography and messages, is that if you're always ready for change on your next message, you're going to be always prepared and you no longer have to worry about it. It's exactly what you do every day if you want to get good at something, is you always prepare for it by exercising and training. And that's what we got to do. How many times have you had a backup system and when you wanted to get something back, you can't? Because nobody attended to it and nobody figured
it's
out.
It's everyone's story. Yeah. You store it on this mechanical device. It's been going for 5, 6, 7 years. And then the one time you need it, it's not there for you.
There you go. So it's the same thing, right? It's like if you're going to build a backup system, it has to be done in an organic way, exercised on every day automatically. And we've built systems like that at Nuts Technologies. We have data systems that self-replicate and self-backup. Right. And it's like you don't even notice it when things disappear because they'll reappear. It's actually pretty cool to see. Yeah.
Right. It's like throughout your entire body. It's never going to lose your DNA. That's for sure.
Well, if you think of DNA, here's another way to look at DNA. One purpose of DNA is to use the resources around this environment in order to back itself up and perpetuate itself. So that's how data, your DNA data, moves into the future. Is that it knows it has a limited lifespan and it knows that it has to now create another version of itself by using the resources at its disposal. And that's one way to look at life, right? So we believe we should be able to do the same thing with our own data. keep it safe and keep it resilient. We believe we could apply those same lessons that we've learned through Nuts into Bolts and Qflex and do the same thing for blockchains, so that no more panicking. Let's not let these reports throw you into a loop. We have a solution. You just need to look for it, right? And need to ask the right questions. Here's the best part. The best part is that we're the complete opposite of the people who are actually working on this solution for blockchains. And what I mean by that is that we haven't been formed by an emergency committee to address this thing for blockchains. We had the solution already 10 years ago, and we did it for an entirely different reason, and we did it in a complete fashion for general solving of applied cryptographic problems. And it just turns out the way we solved it was a very unique way that exactly solves this particular problem with blockchains and quantum computers. So I think what you end up is when you have an emergency team of people putting money and bodies on it, you don't necessarily get the best solutions. Sometimes you do, most of the times you don't. How many projects have you seen that they put hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars and thousands of people, 5 years later, they deep six it, right? Have you ever heard of a messaging system called Symphony?
No, never have.
I think that was like a $1 billion project that Wall Street put into it, that all these banks put money into it to compete with Bloomberg messaging. You no longer hear about it. So yes, putting a lot of people together, a lot of funds, a lot of times it just doesn't go anywhere, right? And we didn't do that. And we didn't specifically envision this particular problem. We were solving a completely different problem. It just happens to be a quantum intersection with blockchain is a subset of the problem we saw, which is actually pretty cool, right?
Yeah, definitely. This was very insightful, I have to say, and I appreciate your time and wisdom, Yun.
There is no wisdom here. It's just years of just staring at the same thing, trying to do something better. And you know, you can see that we are not blockchain people when it's the NIST scientists who pointed it out for us. And we're like, really? And then once we started digging into it, we told our investors in Nuts about it, and they're like, hey, that looks like a good idea. We think there's something there. And we really thought that there was going to be a lot of competition, but we keep track of people that are in there trying to solve the same thing for blockchains. And they're all doing the same thing, which is they're picking algos. They're picking one or the other, or they're picking different variants. And it's like, you're going to end up with the same problem. Why do you want to do that? And the best compliment that we got was like this cryptographer in this large blockchain took a look at us and he's like, I like it because it's so logical. I'm like, well, that's the best compliment you could say, because eventually everybody will come to that realization. Sure. And so that's where we want people to be, because we're that much, we've played with algos for so long that for us it's secondhand. And I believe when it comes to juggling cryptographic algos, you're not going to find anybody better than the team at Bolts, because we've been doing this for now for like close to 10 years.
Right. Thank you so much for your time and wisdom. I definitely appreciate it. And honestly, so much to take in, but I'm going to keep tabs on what you're doing because it does sound quite interesting. And I wish you all the best on your future endeavor.
Thank you for the time and for your questions. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you know, all we want to do is just spread the information that will help people. And all they got to do is send us an email or just reach out to us and we'll explain. I think we're doing that and we hope the message gets out there.